So we come to the Parsha of Korah, and of course, the Parsha begins with Korah himself. And let's look at the Psukim, and sometimes when you read a Pasuk slowly, you begin to notice things. And if you don't, the Mefarshim notice them for you. But the Parsha begins, Vayikach Korah ben Yitzhar ben Kohath ben Levi. So Korah takes, we don't know what he takes, but he took. Vedasan va'aviram, also they're involved. And On ben Peles, who was originally involved and then, thanks to his wife, got uninvolved. Pasuk Beis, Vayakumu lefnei Moshe, they rise up before Moshe. Va'anoshim ibn Yisrael ha'mishim ha'masayim, there's another 250 people in the equation. They are Nisiei Eda, they're princes of the congregation. Kiriyei Moed and Sheshei, people of note. Next, Pasuk Gimel, Vayikalu al Moshe val Aharon, they congregate around Moshe and Aaron, and they say whatever they say, we're all holy, ki kula elo kulam kadoshim, why are you lording over us? Madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. And of course, there's many, many observations we could make about these psukim, but for now, it's interesting to note just how many verbs there are in the beginning. There's a lot of things happen before anything actually happens. Because you've got Pasuk Aleph, Yikach Korach, Korach Tuk, okay, Pasuk Beis, Vayakum Liftei Moshe, they rise before Moshe, Pasuk Gimel, Vayikahalo Moshe Al Aaron, they congregate, so they're taking and they're rising and they're congregating, and then finally someone says something. So what is behind these three verbs? And this question is raised by the Abarbanel. And the general approach of the Abarbanel to the beginning of Korach, as other Mefarshim will each one in their own way also echo, is that when we talk about the machlokas between Korach and his men and Moshe, this machlokas is not a one-size-fits-all. It's not a homogeneous, unified claim at all. In fact, there's quite a few factions even within Korach's group, and each one wants something else, and they're not even really all talking about the same thing. And Abarbanel divides them into, well, Korach, that's number one, Korach's men, those 250 men, that's number two, and Dasan and Aviram, who are a category all unto their own. And each one wants something else. Al Rishon Rishon. What does Korach want? Says Abarbanel, Korach wants the pole position. He wants to be the Kohen Gadol. And what's his claim to be the Kohen Gadol? Says Abarbanel, as Chazal have pointed out, Yichus, which conquers all. Because the hierarchy of the special families here, and as we know, Moshe is the leader. Well, Moshe is the son of Amram, and they derive from the family of Kohath. Well, Amram is one of four brothers. Amram is the oldest of four brothers. And who is the next of those four brothers? Yitzhar, which is Korach's father. And therefore, Korach reasons that, and the way he sees it, it's all about the lineage, which means if Moshe comes from the oldest of the brothers, from Amram, and he becomes the leader, so it's only fair and only fitting that me, Korach, who comes from Yitzhar, the second brother, should take that second position, if you wish to call it that, of Kohen Gadol. So he sees that he has a Yichus claim to Kahuna Gedola. That's Korach. Okay, what about these 250 men? Do they have any such claim to be Kohen Gadol? No. But what they want is the Avodah in general. And what is their claim to such a thing? Says Abarbanel, as do others, again, these Anashim Mibnei Yisrael, they come from the Jewish people generally, but they are Bechorim. And their demand is that the Avodah should be back in the hands of the Bechorim. as if to say, originally it was the firstborn who performed the avodah, as so it was at the time of Matan Torah. They lost it as a result of the Chet HaEgel, but the way they see it, these 250 men, they would like to see the avodah restored to its original and rightful place, which is in the domain of the firstborn. So those, so you've got Korach, he wants to be the Kohen Gadol, you've got these 250 men, they want the avodah generally. We could say they'd like to be the Kohanim. What about Dasan and Avira? Not this and not that. They don't want to be the Kohen Gadol for the life of them. They also don't want to be Kohanim. They're not interested in avodah. But they are interested in a third matter, a matter of prestige. And once Machlokas starts, it attracts, because Dasan and Avirim, as we know, are from the tribe of Reuven. And Reuven was originally the firstborn, and that, or aspects of it, numerous aspects, were taken from him. The kingship, as we know, that went over to Yehuda, Lo Yosur Shebet Mi Yehuda. The Pishnayim, the double portion, which tends to accrue to the firstborn, which would here take the place of one tribe becoming two tribes, that moved over to Yosef. Yosef now becomes the Bechor in that respect, because his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, become Shvatim to a degree in their own rights. And all of that was taken from Reuven. Dasan and Aviram won it back. Interestingly, the removal of the Bechorah from Reuven actually preceded all of this, because that's from Yaakov's brachas. He's the one that says the Ephraim and Manasseh will be like Reuven and Shimon. He's the one that says Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda. But as far as Dasan and Aviram is concerned, chronology is the least of their concerns. Ein mukdam u'me'uchar b'machlokes. Whenever it happened, they don't care. They want it back. So these then are the unlikely alliances of these essentially three groups. And what's fascinating is, says Abarbanel, you can see the group assembling in the beginning of the parsha. And that's really what's behind these opening psukim. You see how Korach begins to attract other people around them. People hear there's something going on, they've got their own claim. And thus we begin, Vayika Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi. So he takes things in hand, he gets the whole thing going, and who are the first to be attracted to his machlokas, not to his cause, but to his machlokas, is Dasan and Avira, and they are B'nai Reuven, and in fact, each one has mentioned at this stage why they feel they should get what they want. Korach, because he's ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi. He's the son of Yitzhar, that's the second brother, as we said. Dasan and Aviron are B'nai Reuven, so their claims are actually mentioned in their pedigree here. And so far we have two of the three groups. They already rise up before Moshe, and that's in Pasuk Beis Vayakumu, that's a second stage. And at that second stage, more people become attracted to them. And that's when we find that Anashim Ibnei Yisrael, there's 250 other people, and they're Nisiei Eda, they're men of note, and men of distinction, and men of merit. And now that all three have come together in Psukim Aleph and Beis, they are a group. And Pasuk Gimel says, Vayikahalu, they all assemble around Moshe. So it turns out that the Moshe essentially has to respond to three different things. And indeed, we see that Moshe does not respond to all these groups at once. How could he possibly do that? They don't want the same thing. And that's why Pasuk Hey, which is about the Avodah, is basically Moshe isolating Korach and the 250 men. He does not respond at this stage to Dasan and Aviram, because he wants to address the issue of Avodah first. And that's got nothing to do with Dasan and Aviram. Indeed, interestingly, Dasan and Aviram, at this stage, go home, wherever home is. Because later on, in a few psukim's time, when Moshe has finished talking to Korach and his men, the pasuk says he sends and calls for Dathan and Abiram. Why does he have to send and call for them? Do they not assemble around him? Are they not all there that he's remonstrating with them and discussing with them? No. His first response is to Korach and his men. It's got nothing to do with Dathan and Abiram. In the meanwhile, they're not going to waste their time listening to people talk about Avodah, and therefore they go home. Once he's finished talking to Korach and his men, he calls for Dathan and Abiram, who refuse to come. And therefore we see that it's multifaceted, Korach's group, and each one needs to be addressed in its own way. And that's why, if we have a look in Pasuk Kaf Ches, as Moshe calls for the famous miracle of the earth opening its mouth, etc., in Pasuk Kaf Ches he says, through this you will know that it is Hashem who sent me to do all of these things. It was not the product of my heart. So what's interesting is, what does he mean by saying, with this you'll know that Hashem sent me to do all of these things? How many things are we talking about? If we take a rather one-dimensional approach to the machlokas, so whatever the machlokas is about, it was about that thing. And therefore Moshe should say, so through this you'll know that Hashem sent me to do that thing that you're disputing. But Moshe doesn't talk about that thing. He talks about kol ha-ma'asim ha'ele, all of these things. And the reason why, says Abarbanel, is because there were multiple things that were being disputed. Who says that the Levim should have the Avoda? Who says that the Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol? And the Dathan and Abiram are in there as well. Who says that this should also be ratified, that Menashe and Ephraim and Malchus goes to Yehuda, etc.? There's a lot of things going on. And Moshe, therefore, needs to verify, authenticate his credentials with regards to all of those things. Kol ha-ma'asim ha'ele. So these are the opening comments of Abarbanel. And as is the way of the Abarbanel, these sweep through the parsha. They give you a certain thematic approach to which runs through the parsha. As we mentioned before, Moshe sends for Dathan and Abiram. They're not interested. And that's in Pasuk Yud Beis. He's finished talking to Korach, at least in a preliminary way, Korach and his men. Okay, now this is the time to address Dathan and Abiram. Lo nale, they don't want to come. And they start insulting him. And you're lording over us. And you didn't even bring us to Eretz Yisrael, which is a very painful thing. And Moshe at that stage becomes upset that he's being accused in that way of abusing his position of authority. And let's have a look at Pasuk Tesvav. Vayichar le Moshe ma'od. Moshe became very upset. Vayomer l'Hashem al tefen el minchasam, to the extent that he says, do not accept any korbanos that they bring. They say, I've abused my position of authority. But he calls Hashem as his witness, so to speak. Lo chamor echad behem nasasi. I've never taken even one donkey from them. I've never taken anything from them based on my authority. I've never appropriated anything from them. Velo harios yasachad behem. I've never done wrong to even one of them. That's Moshe's pained response to the accusations from Dathan and Abiram that he is abusing his authority. No such thing. The Meshech Chochma has a fascinating observation in this pasuk. And you can read the pasuk many times without necessarily noting this point, but of course once it's noted for us, it's impossible to ignore. And it's a subtle point. Moshe says, I never took even one of their animals, I never did the wrong thing by any of them. But the word one in Hebrew is pronounced differently in both of those situations. Let's have a look at Pasuk Tesvav. He says, Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, I didn't take even one of their donkeys. Velo hariosi es achad mehem, and I never did wronged even one of them. So we see that in the first phrase, it's chamor echad. In the second phrase, he talks about achad mehem. Now the question is, which is correct? Is it echad or achad? It is normally echad, as we know. One of something, echad mehem lo nosar, so on and so forth. Which means, the question is, why does Moses shift from talking about one of their donkeys as echad mehem, but when he talks about one of them, he says achad mehem? And Meshech Chochma says, the first clause is about abuse of power. He never took anything from anyone, and that's the standard usage of the word chamor, lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. That's the norm. But then he says he never wronged any of them. And here he says, not echad mehem, but achad mehem. What is the difference between echad and achad? Says Meshech Chochma, we find that although echad is the norm, achad has a connotation. It connotes someone who is special. Where do we find this? Avimelech says this, back in Parshas Vayera. He says Avram and Sarah, Kim'at Shachav Achad Ha'am Es Ishtecha, one of the people was almost intimate with your wife. He's talking about himself. She says she was a sister. Achad Ha'am, Rashi says, Meyuchad Sheba'am, someone who's prominent. So now what Moshe is saying is, I never wronged anyone who is prominent among them. But why does he say it in that way? The Meshech Chochma says a very profound thing. When it comes to the question of humility, there are certain people with which a person can be humble, with whom a person can act in a humble manner, but it is not true humility. One could almost say that it is safe humility. Because if a person is of a certain station or status, and there are people, however these things are quantified, who are of a much lower status, so he can find it very easy to be humble towards them and to be submissive towards them. Why is it so easy to be humble towards such lowly people? Because he doesn't have to worry that anyone will actually seriously think that he thinks that these people are more mechubed than him, because clearly they're not. He's so out of their league that it's safe. He's secure to act humbly without anyone chas v'chalila misinterpreting that he actually thinks that there's something that they have that's better than him. You will tend to find that with his peers, he's more wary. He will give them no quarter. He will give them no consideration, because there's a real danger. They're in the running to be considered more mechubet than him. He can't afford to give them that covet. So it's interesting that a person will find it easy to give covet to those who are way below him, because it's risk-free. And also, by the way, to those who are way above him, because he doesn't have a chance anyway. But it's the people in the middle. It's his equals. They're people that he can't afford to be humble with. And what that means is, someone like Moshe, and Moshe's at the top. So how can you test the humility of Moshe if he acts humbly in front of someone who's just a normal average citizen? That doesn't mean anything, because there's no competition. True humility comes from the way a person treats the competition. And therefore Moshe says, as he protests the fact that he never abuses authority, the real test is that achad mehem, the prominent among them, if he would have abused it, it would have been with regards to them, to put them down, to keep them in their place, to make sure that they don't become the leader. But that's only a worry for those that actually have a chance. And that is why Moshe says, with regards to people, v'lo hari osi es achad mehem. It's really a very wonderful comment. Not only is it so insightful with regards to the way a person can dispense their humility, but also we see how, as always, what comes from paying such careful attention to the pasuk, echad, achad, are two different worlds. Well, to come back to the test that Moshe presents to Korach and his men, to those 250 men, he suggests that they take the test of the Ketores. Pasuk Zion. Zosasu kechulachem martos, take fire pans, korach v'chol adoso, v'usanuva hen eish v'simon en Ketores. Put fire on them, that is to say coals, and put Ketores, and we'll see the one that Hashem will demonstrate, and the one that he has chosen. So it's the test of Ketores. The question is, where does Moshe get this idea from, that the test should be through Ketores? Well, Rashi discusses this. And Rashi says that there are certain qualities about Ketores which make it a good candidate for the test. If you had to choose, you choose Ketores. It's the most beloved of korbanos. The stakes are quite high, because we see Nadav and Avihu, right? They brought Ketores and it was wrongful, and they were punished by it. So it's the right test. Rashi has explained Moshe's choice of Ketores as the test on pure, shall we say, svara grounds. Pure reason, it is the most reasonable candidate. What's very interesting is the Ibn Ezra quotes an approach which states that Moshe told them that the test should be Ketores because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him. Where does Hashem tell Moshe that the test should be through Ketores? Says Ibn Ezra, look at Pasuk Dalet. We've seen every Pasuk here except for Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Gimel, they've gathered around him, and why is he the leader, etc. They're all holy. What does Pasuk Dalet say? Vayishma Moshe vayipol alpono. Moshe heard and fell on his face. What is Pasuk Dalet? What is happening here? He's met with this challenge, he's met with this accusation, and he falls on his face. Why? Says Ibn Ezra, you know what's happening when Moshe is falling on his face here? He is detaching himself from the situation momentarily in order to receive nevuah as to how to proceed. Moshe can receive nevuah at any time, but he needs to be focused to the extent that we can talk about it in that way. So as he's talking with Korach and they're arguing, he needs a moment just to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and find out how Hashem wishes for him to proceed. And in that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicated to Moshe, tell them to bring the Ketores. And that's what Moshe proceeds to do. Interestingly, in this regard also, the Ibn Ezra is not like Rashi. Because Rashi states explicitly that when Pasuk Dalet says that Moshe, in response to those accusations, fell on his face, it was in despair. It was in dismay. Rashi famously says, Zesuchem Revi. This is already the fourth disaster. They had the Egel and the Misonanim and the Meraglim, and this is number four, and it's just getting too much. And we may say that this is Rashi, so to speak, Lishitoso, consistent with his opinion. For Rashi, if Pasuk Dalet is in despair, but not for purposes of communicating, so there was no such communication, which means the idea of Ketores comes from Moshe himself. But then it needs to be explained. Why would he choose Ketores? Which Rashi then proceeds to explain. Whereas according to the Ibn Ezra, Pasuk Dalet vayipol alponav is Moshe receiving nevuah, and the ensuing presentation of the test are the contents of that nevuah. Now, so far, it's a very, very interesting divergence of how to look at this Pasuk Dalet. And the Ramban actually quotes Ibn Ezra, and Ramban picks up the discussion. Because, according to Ibn Ezra, Moshe sought to commune with Hashem through nevuah in this Pasuk Dalet. But then the Pasuk doesn't say that Hashem actually told him anything. All we hear is, by the time with Pasuk, hey, Moshe is back again talking to Korach and his men and telling them things that he received in Nevuah. But why are the contents of the Nevuah themselves not mentioned in the Torah? It should have said something like, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, tell them to bring the Ketores. I mean, that's presumably what happened. Says Ramban, we should know there is a klal godol here, a major principle with regards to the way the Torah will describe Hashem's words to Moshe and Moshe's communication of those words to whoever it may be. Because rarely, says Ramban, do we find that the pasuk specifies both or states both explicitly and in full, as if to say, the pasuk says, Hashem said to Moshe the following, say the following. And then the next pasuk says, and Moshe said the following. It's actually quite rare that we have both. And the reason is very simple, because if you have one, you can infer the other, assuming as if you have enough markers. Examples of both directions already can be found in the section of the Torah in Chumash Shemos dealing with the Makos. You find, for example, with regards to Makas Barot at the end of Parshas Va'era. There, this is in Shemos Perik Tes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a lengthy presentation to Moshe. Vayomer Shema Moshe, come and say to Paro, and tell him, and there's going to be hail, and everyone's got to bring things inside, and if they don't, so then it will be destroyed. And there's a number of psukim there detailing everything Hashem told Moshe to tell Paro. The next thing we find is the Makkah. Hashem tells Moshe, bring about the Makkah. Nowhere does the Pasuk say that Moshe went and told Paro, says Ramban, because the Pasuk doesn't need to say it. If Hashem told Moshe to say the following to Paro, and you've got all the information, the rest can be inferred. You can assume that Moshe went and told Paro, which means the Torah just needs to pick up on what happened next, which is the actual bringing of the plague. That's an example of the first kind, where all the information are in Hashem's words to Moshe, and there's nothing stated about Moshe passing that information on. It's to be inferred. But we also find in the very next plague the opposite. Because the plague of Arbe, of locusts, which is the beginning of Parshas Bo, that Shmos Perek Yud. So Bo, Hashem's communication to Moshe, the way it's presented in the Torah, is quite brief. Bo el Paro, Yeni Echbadati Esli Bo, I've hardened his heart to place my signs there. You will see all the wonders I'll do and tell them for your children. And the next thing we find is Moshe comes to Paro and says, there's going to be a plague of locusts. But the Pasuk didn't say that Hashem told Moshe there's going to be a plague of locusts. Says Ramban, true, but Moshe says, Ko Amar Hashem, Ad Masami Anto, etc., otherwise there's going to be locusts, and that is further information which the Torah didn't give you in Hashem's words to Moshe, because the Torah prefers for you to hear it, for whatever reason, in Moshe's words, to Paro. So there's almost like a conservation of matter, so to speak. It's either explicated in stage one, when Hashem speaks to Moshe, or explicated in stage two. And there are further cases, and these are important discussions also, where the Torah doesn't even talk about Hashem speaking to Moshe, but you can see it from the psukim later on that he did. And a classic example of this is what happens, the events in Parshas Matos, of Bnei Gad, of Bnei Reuven, those 2.5 tribes that stay on the east side of the Yarden. Because if you follow the psukim, it seems to be Moshe talking. There's nowhere does the pasuk say, Hashem said to Moshe, tell them that under the following circumstances, if they go first in war, etc., then they can settle on the east side. The pasuk doesn't say that. But Moshe doesn't have the authority to allow them to settle on the east side. Everyone's meant to go into Eretz Canaan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already told him that he apportions the land in accordance with what Hashem says. So where are Moshe's words coming from? Says Ramban, if you look deeper into that perek as the negotiations go back and forth, so Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven said that we will do everything that Hashem has told us to do. will go forward in war first. Nachnu Navor Chalutzim. B'nei Gad b'nei Reuven, there we find the Pasuk in their words saying that we'll do everything Hashem has told us to do. Now those words we only heard from Moshe, but through B'nei Gad b'nei Reuven we see that these are words that were originally said to Moshe by Hashem. They're not taking it on Moshe's authority. They're taking it directly from Hashem, or more correctly, indirectly from Hashem, but through Moshe. But the source is Hashem. As the Pasuk says later on in Yehoshua, we see further Tanakh corroborations of this idea, because when it talks about the tribal holdings of Bnei Gad, or more correctly the allotment on the east side of the Yarden of Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, this is in Yehoshua Perikah Kaf Gimel, it says Al Pi Hashem Biyad Moshe, from Hashem's mouth through the hand of Moshe. That's how they settled. And there we see that all of this really is Al Pi Hashem, even though the Pasuk doesn't say it. And a further echo of this idea comes from the Ksuvim, from Tehillim, which we say on Shabbos morning, when we talk about the Makim Mitzrayim B'Choreyev, the Makim Melochim Gedolim, Sichan Melech HaMori, the Og Melech HaBashan, those are the kings of the territories of the on the east side of the Yarden. And then the Pasuk says, V'nosan Artsam Nachla, and Hashem gave their land L'Nachla, as an inheritance, Nachla L'Yisrael Abdo. Clear that the allotment of those lands to those tribes was Al Pi Hashem, even though the Pasuk doesn't say. And therefore says Ramban, in terms of Parshanut, this is a major klal that to be aware of, that sometimes you'll find it in Hashem's words and no more, sometimes you'll find it in him speaking on Hashem's behalf and no more, and one needs to be alert for that. And that's the situation here. But then Ramban says there is a third possibility with regards to why the Pasuk doesn't say Hashem said to Moshe, tell them to offer Keturas. And that is, says Ramban, and again this is his own sub-discussion, it could be that Hashem's communication to Moshe that the test should be through Keturas was not in the category of what we would call nevuah, prophecy. Rather, it was through a medium that we call Ruach HaKodesh. We tend to put them all together. We'd like to have either of them. Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh, but they're not the same. Nevuah is a much more specific communication whereby there's a notion that a person is receiving communication. Ruach HaKodesh, and there's many levels of Ruach HaKodesh as well, is literally what we call divine inspiration. That is to say, a person is aware that he is being inspired towards something. An idea comes into his head, and it's clear to him that it's come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's divine inspiration. But because there was no formal communication or formula whereby Hashem is speaking to Moshe and saying, tell them to do the following, but rather Moshe receives the idea and Moshe knows what Ruach HaKodesh is and knows that this idea has come from Ruach HaKodesh, so the Pasuk will not say in words that Hashem said the following to Moshe, because Hashem never spoke to Moshe in that way, but he conveyed or transmitted the idea of Keturas into Moshe's system through the medium called Ruach HaKodesh. That's why there are no words of Hashem to Moshe, but we have Moshe's words based on that Ruach HaKodesh inspiration to Bnei Yisrael. So very, as we can appreciate, that's a klal for all of Chumash, to see when will the Torah emphasize and specify and when will it not. Well, at the end of the day, with all the Parshanut, and after all the Parshanut, the subject of the Parsha is that of Machlokas and how to avoid it, as the Prima Godim states, which we've mentioned, we tend to mention around Parshas Korach, there is a concept of Inyone Diyoma, timely matter. Davar Bi'ito, seasonal. So close to Pesach, one talks about Pesach. Close to Sukkos, one talks about Sukkos, and so on and so forth. In Yonah Diyoma, matters that are of timely relevance. Says the Prima Godim, the Parsha of Korach is in Yonah Diyoma every day, because it's about Machlokas. And Machlokas, has no off-season. Can happen at any time. And therefore, it is literally a timely matter on an ongoing basis. And one reads the parsha, one learns how dangerous machlokas can be. But according to some, the Torah here is teaching us not only how dangerous it could be, but the Torah is actually warning and prohibiting getting involved in machlokas. So says Rav in the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Yud Omed Aleph, Omar Rav, Hamachzik b'machlokas, a person who gets into machlokas, over below Sase, he's violated a negative prohibition in the Torah. Now, if you say that, you've got to back it up. You've got to find a negative prohibition in the Torah. Does the Torah ever say, don't get involved in machlokas? Says Rav, yes, it did. Let's have a look in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Hey. So the beginning of Perek Yud Zayin, the fire is consumed, those 250 men, obviously we're skipping over some of the sections, and their fire pans are to coat the Mizbeach as a reminder. Pasuk Hey, Zikaron Livnei Yisrael, as a reminder for the Jewish people. Lamana Shelo Yikrab Ish Zar, Asher Lo Mizera Aaron Hu. So that no one who is not from descended from Aaron would ever approach Laktir Keteres Lefnei Hashem to offer Keteres. There should be no more disputing the Kehuna. And then, says the Pasuk, V'lo Yihyeh Kekorach V'chadoso. V'lo Yihyeh Kekorach V'chadoso, says Rav. What does that mean? It means the Torah is saying, Lo Yihyeh, like Lo Yihyeh L'cha Elohim Acherim. It's a prohibition. Do not be like Korach and his men. They got involved in Machlokas. Don't be like them. That's a lo sase. Those are the words of Rav. V'lo yieh k'korach v'chadosa is a negative prohibition in the Torah. And in fact, it is codified as such by one of the great Moni HaMitzvahs, those who were Svarim of Mitzvahs, the Smag Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, Rabbeinu Moshe Mikotzi. One of the Rishonim, one of his 613 mitzvahs, one of the 365 negative prohibitions, not to get involved in machlokas, straight from the Gemara. Now, interestingly, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in the course of discussing a different mitzvah, he talks about this. And his understanding is that those words are what's called, they're a drasha or an asmachta, they're attached to the pasuk, but they're not the straight meaning of the pasuk. Why? Says Rambam, there's a klal gadol when it comes to negative statements in the Torah. We've got quite a few klalim this evening. But one needs, in these negative statements, one needs to distinguish between an azhara, that is to say a prohibition, and a shalila, and a negating statement. They both start with no, but they're not the same type of no. And azhara, category one, a prohibition, the lo means this is not allowed to happen. Shalila, a negating statement, means this, so that this will not happen. It's more a description of something that won't happen, as opposed to a prohibition that it may not happen. And says Rambam, if you want an example of a phrase starting with no, that's not a negative prohibition, but it's just a negating statement, he quotes our pasuk, which says, V'lo yeke korach v'chadosa. Why? Because, says Rambam, read it together with the beginning of the pasuk. The pasuk says you've got to take all of those fire pans, coat them as bare. People should remember, in order that there should be no more episodes of Korach. V'lo, it's a description of the something that will hopefully not occur anymore. If people take note, and therefore V'lo yeke Korach v'chadoso is a description that there should be no more like Korach, hopefully, but not a direct prohibition. Don't be like Korach. Those are the words of Rambam, the way that he formulates it. And Rashi actually concurs with Rambam. Rashi has a very brief comment on the words V'lo yeke Korach. Says Rashi, K'day shelo yeke Korach, in order that there should be no more Korach incidents. Put them on the Mizbeach, that people should remember. So that's an interesting machlokas, so to speak. It sounds like it's a machlokas between Rav in the Gemara, who says that it's a negative prohibition, and then Rashi and Rambam, who are Rishonim, who say it's in order that it shouldn't happen. It's one of those, but it's not a prohibition. How can they argue with the Gemara? Well, Yesh Omrim, there are those who say that actually this question itself is debated and disputed in the Gemara. Because straight after Rav's statement, and again he says, Hamasik b'machlokas, over b'lo saseh, one who involved in machlokas, violates a lo saseh. The Gemara then presents Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi says, he should get saras. But where did that come from? Where does taras come from? Person who gets involved in machlokas should get saras. And moreover, generally speaking, when you have one opinion who says something, and then so-and-so Omar, they're normally arguing with the first. Otherwise, it would just be Omar so-and-so if it's a new statement. But if it's so-and-so Omar, so then it's countering the first statement. But why is there a machlokas? So the Mefarshim explain, because the way Rav Ashi learns the pasuk, v'lo yeh kekoch v'hadoso, is disputing Rav. It's not a prohibition. Rather, it's a negating statement. What is it saying? It's saying that whoever disputes the kahuna will not be like Korach v'chadoso. Whoever gets into machlokas will not be like Korach v'chadoso. Because what happened to them? They got swallowed up into the ground. And the pasuk is saying what happens to other people will not be like what happened to Korach, but rather will be kasher dibur Hashem biyad Moshe lo. Hashem spoke to Moshe biyad Moshe. Yad Moshe, not El Moshe, biyad Moshe, Moshe's hand. Says Rav Ashi, Moshe's hand is famous because it got saras. He's the first person ever to get saras for one of the signs. Yad Moshe represents now the condition of tzaras, and now says Rav Ashi, that's why it's a machlokas. Rav says v'lo yeh kekoruch v'chados means don't be like them. It's a negative prohibition. Rav Ashi says no. It's saying whoever starts a machlokas will not be like them. Meaning what happened to them, what happened to him. Rather, what will happen is what happened to the hand of Moshe. That is an altogether different type of interpretation. And Rashi and Rambam seem to side with Rav Ashi that it's a negating statement. Just a final approach here, even though one wouldn't imagine there's room for one more, but there is. Because the Ramban, actually, in his critical comments to the Sefer HaMitzvahs, so he understands that it is a prohibition. But the scope of the Torah's prohibition is specifically to dispute the kahuna. That's the pasuk in context. That's an Isser Torah. V'lo, do not be like Korah disputing the kahuna. The authenticity of the fact that the Kohanim are meant to do the Avoda. Machlokas in general, the Pasuk isn't talking about that. Which means that if Rav said it, so that's a lo sase, that's going to be a drash expansion. That's an asmachta, that's a drabonon expansion of the Pasuk. So that's the approach of Ramban. If we could summarize, the approaches to these words, below ye kakorot v'chadoso, are two, which become four. Because each path itself has two possibilities. The first path is that it's a prohibition, but the question is, but what is the prohibition about? For Ramban, the Torah prohibition specifically is about disputing kahuna, the authenticity of kahuna. Everything else is Rabbanan. Whereas for the smag, as we saw, all machlokas is included within the Torah prohibition. Those are two ways within that first path. And the second, that is a negating statement, it's saying it will not happen, but what will not happen? Either for Rashi and Rambam, that people should not be like Korach resultantly, or according to the Gemara, it's a description of what will not happen to the person who gets involved in machlokas. He won't be swallowed up like Korach, rather he'll get saras. So that's quite a lot of traffic, shall we say, surrounding that. At the end of the day, whether it's a prohibition or not, whether it's deraisa or drabanan, sometimes it's deraisa because it's pikuach nefesh. The damage that machlokas can cause. And the Mishnah tells us, Hakina v'atava v'akobed motzines ha'odem in the olam. that to these three, a person who's obsessed with those things, they can take him out of the world. And some say it literally means they can kill a person, which we know it can. And Korach was killed because of jealousy. He is the example of a person who left the world due to jealousy. But others say, even if it doesn't take a person out of the world, but it takes a person out of his world, these things have the capacity to cause a person, once machlokas starts, people act in a way that they would never act under normal circumstances. When they calm down, often they can't believe they said the things that they did. So what happened to them? They left their world. They lost their equilibrium. Bet Mutzien es Adam in Olam. And there are unfortunately too many examples of this, but that's how it begins. And that's how shuls begin. The proliferation of shuls, it starts with that. You know, the official title of the shul is Ahavas Shalom. Mm. But the real title of the shul should more likely be, they gave the other guy maftir. And that's and all of a sudden a new building sprouts up. So this, as we said, is in Yonah de Yoma on a daily basis. Plenty to think about. We'll leave it over there for this evening.